Good morning. Welcome to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week we're going to talk about wine. My guest is George Exum. He is a farmer from Puget Island who, if you go to the Thursday Farmers... Wait a minute. River People's Market in Astoria, he is one of the vendors. He has sauerkrauts, kimchi, lots of fruits and vegetables, including figs. You might know him by that, with his wife, Carol, who was on a few weeks ago. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Ann.
Okay, so you're a wine guy. So how long have you been making wine?
About 25 years. Originally got started, Carol gave me a homebrew beer kit for Christmas one year, and I got started trying to make beer, and had a visiting friend from Vermont came in September, and he noticed all the blackberries, and he said, "Oh, you should make blackberry wine." I said, "I don't know how to make wine." He just said, "It's really easy," and that was my first attempt at wine, and I gradually...
Wait, was it good?
Actually, it was very good, and I think I might still have a bottle of it.
You made a lot.
Yeah, it was, I think, around 1980. Mm-hmm. And I made 5 gallons, but I set one aside, and I don't know, by this time it might be way far gone, but I gradually phased out of making beer. So many people do it so well, and concentrated on making the wine.
And what do you mostly make?
Well, currently in my living room, there are 14 containers, actually 14 different wines. I make wine out of literally anything that I can get in abundance. It takes approximately 20 pounds of fruit to make 5 gallons of wine. And
okay, so just for perspective, that's like a box of peaches.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a
standard
wine.
Yeah, or a couple of flats of berries.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just a standard. Sometimes it's a little more. I mean, but if I bought a flat of peaches, that would be 5 gallons of wine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so if wine can be made out of anything that you can get, that must account for why in every culture in the world, they're making wine out of something.
Exactly. And, you know, the most remote tribes in the Amazon to places in Africa, they make some sort of fermented beverage out of what is available.
Well, in Mexico, there's that corn stuff that's supposed to be really good. I've never had it.
Well, and then there's also pulque, which is the first step in the making of tequila. It's just basically fermented agave. And it is a little harsh, but if you're riding through on a train, people come selling it in used milk bottles. So...
Okay, well, obviously there is a desire among humans to get blasted, right? We've been doing it for thousands of years.
Yeah, or just to relax.
It's a
you know, a perfectly acceptable way to, you know, calm down and either have it with your meal or sitting around just looking at the beautiful area we live in. And you know, as long as it tastes good, it's a joy.
It does taste good. Okay, so let's go through the steps. What do you do? And is it important that things be sterile?
Sterile, that's probably the most important thing. Everything should be sterile.
And what happens if it's not? Is that where you get mold?
You get mold or off tastes.
Oh.
And, you know, basically sterilization and airtightness are the two keys for success. You can do it with minimal equipment. You need a food quality 5 gallon bucket with a tight lid.
What, like something that might have had like oil in it or peanut butter, that kind of, like,
yeah,
one of those thick,
yeah,
white tub with a handle?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can get them in a lot of different places, and I happen to use the one that was in that beer making kit, which is actually a 6-gallon container. It's available at any brewing supply store.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's one here in Astoria, Hondo's.
Oh, so you can get supplies for making beer and wine there.
Yes,
okay.
Definitely. And otherwise, there's places in Portland, there's online places, there's no shortage of the availability. The other item that's essential is a 5-gallon glass, what's called a carboy. It's basically a 5-gallon glass jar. Most of the water used to come in. Some of the older ones you can see had been for acid, but they're...
Does it has a lid on it?
No, that's where you put an airlock. The airlock is comprised of a cork with a hole in it and a plastic cup with a stem that has a lid. So as the fermentation happens, it creates a gas which raises the little lid to release the gas into water. That keeps the airtightness of the wine.
Okay, so that jar and that airlock sound like very special things. You're not going to find those at a garage sale.
Actually, I found some at garage sales. I found them on Craigslist.
Okay, so people that have given up on, but you wouldn't have this for anything but making wine, right?
Some people might have them for emergency water. They're great containers for storing emergency water. You can just put any kind of seal on it and have water stored in it.
So what, I'm not sure, what does the opening at the top look like?
The opening, it comes up almost like a vase.
Like a vase, okay.
And so the opening at the top, it's maybe 16 or 17 inches across at the bottom and comes straight up and then tapers to...
Oh.
About an opening of maybe an inch or an inch and a quarter. So that also helps create a passage for the fermentation gas.
Wow. Okay. So then you need that. So what, do you need anything else?
There's a few ingredients. Okay. Those are two essentials. A nice thing is a press, but as I said at the class at Farmstock, I started out, I didn't have a press. And you can take the
like an apple press?
Smaller.
Okay.
Basically, it looks like that. It's just the barrel that you would hand screw down.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is, well, it can, it's probably 12 or 16. Yeah. 12 inches across and maybe 16 deep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I put the fruit in to squeeze it. And I don't, through the process of learning and spraying things all over the house one time, I put it in like a pillowcase or a cotton bag so it all stays in and doesn't shoot out all sides.
Of course, the other thing would be to either do it outside or do it in the garage or somewhere where it wouldn't matter if it did splatter.
Right. Even now, I do almost all of it outside, even with the bag.
I wouldn't recommend doing something like blackberries in the house at all under any circumstances, even with a bag. That just sounds like a disaster.
It does drip. And, if you have a surface that's easy to clean, it's fine. But it's so much easier to just do it outside.
Well, if you had a pot shed with some room, that might be a place that would be, you wouldn't care if it got...
Yeah, I just do it on the deck outside our house.
That sounds good. Okay, so you like a purple deck or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay, so then you squeeze all the fruit. You get the raw fruit, you just squeeze it.
No, so say I just picked 20 pounds of blackberries, which is what's happening right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I would put that in the 5-gallon bucket.
Mm-hmm.
I would add water. And then I use a sugar syrup. a 2-to-1 sugar to water syrup, which I boil.
Mm-hmm.
And I put that in over an incremental period. So to start the fermentation, I would take 8 cups of the 2-to-1 syrup, put that in with the fruit, the water, and then it's two pretty normal things to add as acid blend. Grapes are the only fruit that produces everything it needs to be fermented. You use any other fruit, you have to blend it to get the acids right. And so you would use, here again, you can buy it at
a supply store.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even grocery stores have brewing supplies.
And if you don't have acid blend, and this is how I
and
started.
And so that's what it's called when you buy it?
Mm-hmm.
Acid blend, okay.
You can use citric acid, which you can get anywhere.
Oh, okay.
You can use tea, black tea for the tannins.
But you don't just put tea in. Do you brew it?
Yeah, you would brew like a very strong cup of tea
and
add that.
And do you get, if you were buying either the acid or citric acid, how much would you add?
For 5 gallons, you add about 1/4 cup this, and it's a granulated substance that looks like sand, and it's blended to balance all the acids in.
And that's what it does, or does it help in some other way with the fermentation, or
is it
a pH thing?
It is because. Mm-hmm. Really acidic fruit sometimes will stop your fermentation.
Oh.
So.
Like if you were trying to make lemon wine?
Actually, even for me, and cranberry has been one that's been difficult for me because it's so acidic. And my friend Gary Sunderland, though, does it really well, and I don't know why I had troubles. What happens is the fermentation stops and I end up with a very sweet wine. Now, some people like sweet wine. It's not necessarily what I prefer.
So you'll have a shorter fermentation time if it's too acid.
Right.
So if you get the acidity right, it's...
Then it will continue out.
Okay.
So then you would add yeast nutrient, which helps the yeast work, and a wine yeast.
So you're not at, you are adding yeast and something to feed the yeast besides the sugar.
Right.
I always thought sugar was plenty for yeast.
Actually, what the nutrient does is just help it get started. And you can do it without, I just tend to do it. It's like
insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're using
it. And in fact, a lot of people will add the yeast nutrient to the yeast when you're getting the yeast working. You don't just throw the powdered yeast in. You put it in, a measuring cup with water, and you can put the yeast nutrient then. Then you let it stand till it actually starts working.
You don't put any sugar in that?
Sometimes it...
Like if
I'll
you're
use the
bread.
Jar that I... Or the cup that I poured the sugar from, so mm-hmm. there's... You know, whatever
residue
mm-hmm. is in it, you can just sprinkle a little sugar in, whatever. It helps. It does help the process.
Mm-hmm.
So then you would take all those ingredients, put it in your bucket after the yeast is in it, cover it over tight, and forget about it for a week to 10 days. And then we would come back to pressing.
Oh, that sounds good. Oh, that's when we get to the pressing. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue on how to make wine. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to add in to the conversation, give a call here at 503-325-0010. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt, and we'll be right back.
Sistema, alguien casi sin pena de hablar. Su voz me condena porque no termina de hablar.
back. If you're just joining us, you are listening to Dig in the Dirt. And I'm with Jord Exum, who is a farmer on Puget Island and makes fruit wines and teaches other people how to make fruit wines. And we are at the point in making 5 gallons of wine where we have put all the ingredients we need, the yeast, the acid, the sugar, the fruit, water, in. So we're not cooking it. We're just putting it all in. Oh, wait, did you mash? You didn't mash the fruit.
Mm.
You just...
No, in terms of mashing the fruit, according to what it is, if it's like apples or pears or something, you might want to... I just take like a clean 2x4 and...
sort There's of just such a break. Thing as that?
Oh,
just
yeah.
Like, oh, look, because of peaches or apple. Okay, right. So you just mash it up
a
bit.
Yeah, but it's not, you don't need to pulverize it. You just need to break the skin so it's easier for the juice to come out.
Okay, so we've got it in the 5 gallon jar that's got the sealed lid and it's in there and it sits for a week.
Right.
Then what?
If you have a press, you would press it. If you don't have a press, you can hang it in a bag over a catch basin and just let gravity do the work, and then you can just sort of hand squeeze it. One of the things I had was a couple of 1x12s with a leather strap, sort of like a bellows, that I could just put my bag of fruit in to help squeeze it. But so there are options, and once... you've pressed it and gotten all of the juice out, that's when it goes into the glass 5 gallon carboy. And at that time, I add another 8 cups of sugar syrup.
2 to 1.
2 to 1. And that helps the fermentation continue. And then you put an airlock on it and stick it in the corner. And about...
Does it matter if it's summer or winter? Or it's in the house, so it's going to be around 70 or something anyway.
Right. It's, you know, it probably would be better if it was cooler, but, you know, you...
Oh, so you could put it in the basement then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not in direct sun or anything like that?
The sun hits mine. It's probably bad for it, but, I haven't, had any, terrible effects from it. Then about a week later, I would put the last 8 cups of sugar syrup. So a total of 24 cups of sugar syrup.
Okay. And so the yeast are eating this. They're really hungry.
Mm-hmm. And then you don't think about it for months.
You put that in the carboy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not full?
No, it's probably 3/4 full. And you'll see the little bubbler in your airlock going. And when it's not going very much anymore, then I'll top it off with water so the thing is totally full. And you just let it set away for 3 or 4 months and then taste it. If it's the way you like it, you can start drinking it. Carol's dad had a great thing. He made fruit wines too. And in fact, that's how I got the press. He said, when it tastes good, drink it, because you don't know what it's going to taste like when you're saving it. And that is, fruit wines are not like grape wines. They don't necessarily age. Some of them do. Blackberry's one that can last a while. Apple works. But most fruit wines, you have to drink within the first couple of years.
Well, that doesn't sound like it should be so hard to drink 5 gallons of whatever wine. I mean, if you like it.
It's when you have 14 of them that sometimes is a little problem. But I bring it everywhere I go.
Uh-huh. And now, the person who makes wine at home can't sell it. Or technically
Unfortunately,
can't.
Correct, yes. At one time, I considered doing this commercially.
It's too many hoops?
There's a lot of hoops, mm-hmm. State and federal, and they don't really differentiate between someone who wants to make a couple hundred gallons and someone who wants to make 10,000 gallons.
Oh, great.
So, my take on it was I did not need a full-time job. and we have the farm, which is
that right
close enough.
It's enough. All right. So, how do you make a wine? Can you control the amount of sweetness in a wine? Like, let's say you're making blackberry, but you want it to be tart, or you're making blackberry and you want it to be sweet. Like you're making more like wine syrup that you're going to put on ice cream versus I want to have it with dinner and I want to eat it with my salmon and I want it to be more tart.
You would stop the fermentation where most of the wines I make, I want to be dry wines.
So then you let it go longer.
I let it go until it's still. If you get to the point where you like it, then you want to stop the fermentation, which the easiest way, I mean, there are additives you can put in to stop the fermentation. But if you break the airlock and not let other, you know, critters in, fruit flies are the worst thing that can happen to wine if they get in your wine.
Do they ruin the taste?
Yeah, they can, yes.
Oh.
And also...
And this is the time of year when fruit flies start happening because there's so much rotting fruit around.
Yes. So, it's a process of, just stopping the fermentation if you get it where you want it. I use a standard recipe, and one thing I will say to anyone who wants to get into this, keep copious notes. Know what yeast you're using, know as much as you know about everything. I mean, I have a booklet with the recipe of every wine I've ever made. And so when I want to try to make the wine just like it, then I look back, okay, what kind of yeast did I use?
Did I add of this?
And, the one determining factor here, which... if you want to, you can be scientific. You can check specific gravity. I tend to let it be whatever it comes out is what it is.
But specific gravity device is a very inexpensive thing you can get at any brewing place or any scientific hardware store.
Yeah, that you can get a saccharometer almost anywhere. If you're looking for a specific thing, then specific sweetness, then your basic want to do is stop the fermentation. In fact, how most wineries make port, which tends to be a little sweeter, and they stop the fermentation and add fortified spirits, and that stops fermentation. And it raises the alcohol level.
What's a fortified spirit?
Port.
Oh, you mean finished?
Fortified spirit, like distilled spirits, just...
Oh, okay, so like vodka or rum or whatever, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, they just use, probably a generic, distilled product.
Mm-hmm, interesting. So that also stops it.
Yes, and that, I've visited wineries that had nice ports and they're very not forthcoming with their secrets on how they do that.
Okay, so I want to go back to the preparations you can add to stop fermentation. What are they?
I don't know. I myself have never done it because I just let them go. But I know there are products available.
Okay, so that would be something that the new winemaker could investigate at a store that sells those supplies.
Right, if that's what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, right, somebody who has nothing might want to just be prepared.
I think your best bet to start with is to just let the process happen because it is a natural process and see what you get. If you're not getting a product you want, then it's time to find out how you want to manipulate it.
Okay, so what happens when you get vinegar? What did you do wrong? Or maybe, usually people that are making wine and they make vinegar did not intend to make vinegar.
Right, and I have a really good friend who used to make cider, and he'd press enough apples to do 55 gallons of cider. And he ended up 1 year with 55 gallons of apple cider vinegar because his dog knocked over the airlock and he didn't catch it.
Oh, so just getting some organisms in there through the air. Oh, man.
And that's
So there's contamination. Okay, so if you get vinegar, you have contamination. Okay, what if you want to make vinegar?
I don't know.
You've never made it?
Actually, I got some mother of vinegar just last year because I had a wine I wanted to try to make it with, and it didn't work to... I'm still working on that process because I'd like to make it.
So it's similar, but it's different.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So that's
and but I was starting with a wine to make vinegar. Oh. I wanted to make wine vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am still going to experiment with that. Mm-hmm. I'm also experimenting with herbal wines and wines for health. And Carol and I, being a little older, arthritis is an issue, and so this year I made both parsley and celeriac wine, which is also in the parsley family, because we read that it's good for arthritis.
And how does it taste?
Oh, it tastes really good. In fact, I was going to bring you some, but when I see you at the market, I'll give you some.
Awesome.
The other, I've made lemon balm wine.
Wow, that sounds good.
And a rosemary lavender. In fact, I made a greens dish at Farmstock on Sunday for the dinner, and I steamed all of the kales and mustards and everything in rosemary lavender wine. And
that makes me think that you could take whatever, you know, plant and add it to the mash when you're fermenting. Like, you could take sprigs of rosemary and put it in whatever.
Yes.
I mean, you could add anything. Mm-hmm. You could add parsley to your...
And one of the wines that I make, which is loved by many, is fennel wine. And it is outrageously great. And if we have time, I'll actually tell you how we got to... start on ferments. We were wine tasting in the Dry Creek Valley area of California and stopped at a winery that had been recommended to us and got talking to the woman who was pouring the taste, and I told her about my fennel wine. She says, "Hold on, I got to get the boss." And so... the owner came out and we got talking, you know, fermentations, and I ended up mailing him some fennel wine. But then he went back and came out with platefuls of fermented turnip, you know, lacto-fermented turnips and all manner of root vegetables for us to taste. And when we came back from that trip was the first time we made sauerkraut.
Wow, that is a great story, and you make fabulous sauerkraut and wonderful kimchi. Yeah. Well, thank you, George.
I appreciate coming on.
Yeah, it's been great having you. You've been listening to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine.